You are listening to the News Project podcast for the week of May 24th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories: a proposed Manchester solar site causes concerns, ARPA on the way, and town meeting in Weston.
On Tuesday, May 25th, the state's Public Utility Commission held a site visit along a stretch of Richfield Road in Manchester to gain a first-hand look at the proposed location for a more than 2,000-panel net-metered solar project. The site visit is part of a process by which such proposed projects obtain needed state permits to proceed, known as Certificates of Public Good. The 500-kilowatt project, which has been in the works for over a year and has obtained a designation of preferred site status for the site on Richfield Road from the Town and Regional Planning Commission, would use about 3 acres of an 8-acre parcel of land to the west of Richfield Road near the intersection with East Manchester Road. But it's drawn some concerns from local residents who are uneasy about the change to their views of Mount Equinox, their property values, and possible flooding from nearby Bourne Brook. The site visit was conducted by Jake Marin, an attorney who works with the Public Utility Commission.
Today's site visit is to help the commission staff get some context and better understand the filings that we've received in this case. We've received lots of documents, lots of testimony, pictures. Coming here and seeing the site helps us better understand those documents and pictures so that the commission can make an informed decision in the case. The purpose of today's site visit is not an opportunity for advocacy or argument about the merits of this proposal. We do want to hear from everyone who has an opinion. There are two ways that people can participate in this proceeding still. For the parties, people who have intervened and have been participating for some time now, they know that there's a schedule in this case and that there are briefs due on May 27th and reply briefs due on June 3rd. So if you're a party, please file your thoughts and your comments as those briefs, and if you need help doing that, I have information about how to get in touch with the clerk. If you're a member of the public and you'd like to express your opinion about this, we'd love to hear from you. There is no deadline for public comments. I would ask if you could get them in by June 3rd, that would be helpful. The what we're seeing and hearing from people today is not part of the evidentiary record in this case. The decision the commission makes will be based on the documents that are filed. So again, if you have something that you want to say to us, please put it in writing and file it with the commission. So with that out of the way, what I'd like to ask the applicant to do is to help orient us to the site. Please, if you could just point out where is the project going to be located, what are its general limits. This is the site over here. We're standing Green Mountain Road here, the corner, looking across at the site. So it's the field you see out here, and the project goes back to the far tree line. There's a section of shrubs and trees partway across the field, and then there's another patch of hay field. So the project goes to that back tree line. And then, yep. And then as far as extent down this way, it goes down 1, 2, 3, approximately 4 power poles down. And we placed a stick out in the field there that's 100 feet from the traveled way. It's just over this gray car. So the closest panel to the road is 100 feet back from the road. So the vegetative screening will go just on the far side of the power line here. And then you'll have approximately 80 to 85 feet between the vegetative screening and the nearest solar panels.
But before the site visit could get underway, some of the neighbors wanted to weigh in.
So essentially what you're saying is you're going to make a decision regardless of input, but our input is appreciated.
No, sir, that's not what I said.
Sounds like.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
That's what it sounds like.
Could you elaborate, please, one more time?
As I said, the commission considers all the comments and uses that to identify the issues and concerns that the public has, and that they look at the evidentiary record to see how that information should inform their decision.
Right, but then this vision would have to be formulated, and ultimately, once you take that next step, we're not in the loop at that point, and you're basically saying this is the decision, and we are, that's it.
Sounds like you want motions and evidence brought into which you will consider, but none of us are lawyers, so we're not able to submit those.
I can only supply my feelings, thoughts, and emotions. And short of that, I have nothing. I have no soil samples. I don't know geographies. I can't basically do anything that would ultimately change the course of your thought process from a fact-finding standpoint. All I can tell you is I live here. I don't want it.
Yep. Okay. What factors are you considering to sway your decision one way or the other?
The factors are laid out in Section 248 of Title 30 in the Vermont statutes. It's a set of criteria that include environmental, aesthetic, and other economic criteria that the state has determined or how the commission determines whether a project's in the public good.
Would it sway you either way to see a show of hands of people who would object to the panels going in over across the road?
The commission is aware that there are many people here who are objecting to the panels. We've received many public comments to that effect. So. This conversation, I think, has run its course, and it's time for us to do our site visit to look at the site. So we're going to walk, we're going to look. I'll take one more, please.
Okay. If this project goes through, who's going to benefit from the power that it generates?
None of us.
I don't know, sir. That's not part of the 248 review of who receives the power from the net metering system.
Probably tell you.
So, yeah, I would turn that applicant. The applicant may be able to answer that.
Vermont has renewable energy goals. This project will supply power into the grid that will help to meet Vermont's renewable energy goals.
Green Mountain Power.
Green Mountain Power is the utility here. Correct.
Our good is being weighed against the public interest. And the state criteria. That's what it seems like right now. If you're saying the state hands down criteria to basically tell us what meets the public interest, and that's what you're judging against, and then my interests are here, ultimately, like my interests are purely visual. That's all I care about, ultimately.
But this is a profit-generating endeavor, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mayor, we're happy to answer questions. But we'd like you to do the site visit, and we can answer questions.
That sounds fine. We're going to take our walk now. Thank you very much.
According to documents filed with the Public Utility Commission, MHG Solar, the Manchester-based company that hopes to build the project, has stated the array will consist of about 15 rows of solar panel racks and will connect to the Green Mountain Power System, feeding the solar-powered energy into their system. Tom Hand, the developer, described what they were hoping to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fundamental key is we haven't received any comments about the project other than that neighbors say they don't like it. So you can see in the public comments, we're proposing to spend $30,000 on landscape mitigation, trees, shrubs, plants, to screen the view of the project, and there's been no comment on that. So, we've done the best we can to screen it, and we're spending a considerable amount of money to that effect. But, some people just don't want it, and there's nothing that we can say that would appease those folks.
Well, you got to remember there's a 100-foot setback requirement from the road. So we have 100 feet of the existing field and then the vegetation we're adding, and then the panels start. So we're using about 3 acres of the 8-acre parcel.
But several of the adjoining neighbors sounded like they were far from comfortable with the idea.
I'm opposed to the project as a young family man, business owner in the community, and also the aesthetics of Vermont. If you're not here for those things, then ultimately, what are you here for? And when you take those from people knowing that you can't get them back, I'd rather have a longer process with more input, more data, and understanding, and ultimately some rewards for the local communities if the energy is just going to go to the state and they're going to ultimately decide. That sounds more like socialism energy to me. I want some local rewards. I want some ultimately understanding that once it's gone for good. So let's take our time because everybody wants to keep Vermont, Vermont.
We've had concerns from the very beginning. There have been a number of issues that have been raised. First is,
that it was never publicized, and probably 98% of the people in town had no idea that this was even proposed. The two meetings that they had before the design and review board, they allowed us 15 minutes at each meeting to speak, and we were only each allowed to speak once. We couldn't get much across that way. The select board had a meeting and they voted on it. At that point, nobody even knew the select board was meeting on the issue. And they didn't follow the town plan. The Manchester town plan has a specific section having to do with scenic byways in Manchester. Of those, Manchester West Road, Barnumville Road, and specifically listed is Richville Road. And yet, they voted that it would be okay to put that right in the middle of this field. They say it won't have any detrimental effect to the aesthetic view of this field. How can they say that when they're going to put over 2,000 panels right in the middle of the field that everyone has to look at as they drive or walk by?
The Public Utility Commission will be continuing its review of the project, and a decision on the Certificate of Public Good is still pending. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. If things go according to plan, by the middle of June, and possibly earlier, local town governments will be receiving the first of two installments of federal money allocated through the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, legislation that was passed earlier this year by the U.S. Congress to help municipalities and county governments across the country offset the negative economic effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's a once-in-a-generation opportunity for local governments to offset extraordinary expenses incurred while fighting the pandemic and perhaps build back better by investing in services or infrastructure that will help boost economic trends and leave them better off than before. Between two channels of money, one oriented on a per capita basis for the towns and cities, and the other by county, about $300 per resident may be headed Vermont's way. But there are some strings attached. To get a better idea of what ARPA might hold for Vermont and local governments, we talked first with Ted Brady, who was recently named as the executive director of the Vermont League of Cities and Towns and was previously the deputy secretary of the state's Agency of Commerce and Community Development.
State of Vermont is getting more than $1 billion that's pretty flexible from ARPA. And the state legislature and the governor are having conversations about how to spend that billion or so dollars. In addition, you know, there's $113 million in a capital fund, which is meant for infrastructure. And that's another pot that the legislature and the governor are having conversations about what to do with that funding. And then in addition to that, there's about $200 million in ARPA money that's going directly to municipalities that each of our legislative bodies at our town level, city level, and village level will have to decide how to spend in accordance with the guidance that Treasury provides. And that Treasury guidance will tell states and tell towns, cities, and villages how that money needs to be distributed. It will be based on a population share. So each community will get a certain amount of dollars based on the size of their population, size of their community. The exact dollar figure is still up in the air. It's going to be close to that number. You know, in the end, Vermont communities should get somewhere near $300 per capita. But that number could be less, it could be more, depending on what Treasury does with the guidance, depending on if there are communities that were not considered in the original allocations that have been shared. So that number is a real rough estimate. So here's what we do know. When Treasury issues the guidance, we expect the state of Vermont to issue a allocation table. And that will tell every community how much ARPA money they're going to have an opportunity to help them recover from the pandemic. That money is based on really three different components. Component one is what's called entitlement money, and that money will go to only the city of Burlington, because that's the only entitlement community we have in Vermont. Then there's non-entitlement money, and that $180 million or so will be distributed by population. On two tracks, one based on town, city, and village government, and then the second on county government. because we do not have general county government in Vermont, we do have some functioning county government for law enforcement and courts, but because we do not have a general county government, it is widely expected, and I think rightly so, that county money will be distributed in a very similar way to that non-entitlement local money. So yes, for the citizens of Vermont, the really important thing to know is communities will be getting somewhere near $300 per capita to help them recover from the pandemic.
We also caught up with State Representatives Kathleen James and Seth Bongartz to fill us in further, but before some of the guidance from the U.S. Treasury Department had been released.
Accounts, very careful accounting to keep this out of your normal system of, and to make sure that it's very easy to track where it went and to make sure that it was spent appropriately. But I think infrastructure, it is for infrastructure and largely, except for the back, which is kind of odd because this isn't infrastructure, the backfilling of lost revenue, but otherwise it's for infrastructure. But infrastructure can be a lot of things. It's not just sewer and water and broadband.
Yeah, so speaking specifically today about the ARPA plan funds that are gonna be flowing directly to municipalities and counties, that's different, of course, from the $2.7 billion that will be flowing to Vermont through all of the streams. Obviously, there are going to be some strict reporting requirements, so you want to make sure you're keeping very careful track. But you have until the end of 2024 to spend these dollars. Set them aside for now. Wait until the guidance is clear. Go to some of the other available funds first. You've got a couple years to figure out the most strategic way to invest these dollars.
We also had a chance to talk with Nick Zayas, the town administrator of Arlington. He and the town select board have zeroed in on using the approximately $600,000 they expect to receive from the feds on a water and sewer project.
The general idea of this, with all of the caveats of we don't know exactly what the rules are, but from what we understand of the rules, the rules are going to be most least stringent, most viable for water projects and sewer projects. So the Arlington Water Department is the residual claimant on all money we don't spend on other allowed expenses. So we have about three water projects to work on, and then one or two rest of government expenses that are COVID-related and that we expect to be allowed. That includes digitization in the clerk's office and with the cemetery commissioners potentially. We're going to be seeking out a study on wastewater engineering for a proposed expansion or reuse of the Arlington School District's wastewater plant. So if those expenses are allowed, we'll be spending money on them. But the big projects are going to be in the water department near West Arlington, in Chiselville, and potentially some wells on South Road near the pump house.
So towns are being urged to sequester the money in a separate account as more guidance and information becomes available, and they will have about 3 years to determine how to spend it. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Under bright sunny skies on Tuesday morning, May 25th, the town of Weston held its annual town meeting outside at the Weston Playhouse, which would usually have been held indoors at the Playhouse in early March. This year, town officials, like several of their counterparts locally, opted to wait until now before holding their town meeting in order to be able to conduct votes off the floor, or in this case, the front steps and entrance to the historic theater, in person. About 70 townspeople showed up for what might be a once-in-a-lifetime town meeting. Once there, voters passed all the 23 articles in the town warning, which included items such as approving funding for the Bridge Repair Fund, a town budget of about $556,000, a highway budget of a little over $1 million, along with several other routine expenditures. Town officers were also elected, mostly by voice vote, but one select board position for a 2-year term currently held by Bruce Downer, drew a challenging nomination. That led to a paper ballot vote, which resulted in Mr. Downer retaining his select board post by a 52-14 vote margin. After all the articles had been voted through, several of the attendees used the other business moment to weigh in on their concerns about automobile speeding in the village. The issue is not a new one and is under a current study.
Also, the fact that when people coming down 155, they really fly because it's just the natural, the way the road drops, you know, so they come down a hill. But if there was a stop sign at that intersection where 155 is, that would eliminate the problem. But eventually, there's going to be a bad accident there because it's just speeds are totally out of control coming down 155.
I know I am, and a lot of people are really concerned about the speed in this town. It's, you know, it's a disaster waiting to happen.
The speeds are crazy at certain times. It's worst in ski season. It's worse at between 7:30 and 9 o'clock in the morning and late in the afternoon, when people are going to and from ski areas, when people are going to and from work at ski areas and other businesses like that.
The matter of speed in the village is probably a half a century old, I don't know, but there's one thing that I do know, and that is that of late, last year or two, I'll bet there is not another topic that has come up more often at select board meetings than speeding in the village. And Betty's right about the meeting that started over here, whenever it was, I don't even remember anymore, but it was within the last 2 years. And there was, you could have gotten the impression easily at that meeting that there'd be information forthcoming imminently from that. A lot of information was collected, a lot more will be collected. There's an engineering firm that's involved in it. The engineering firm will end up making a presentation to the town, and COVID has really kind of messed that up.
After the meeting, which lasted about 2 hours, we caught up with the town moderator, Wayne Grandquist, and one of the select board members, Charles Tim Goodwin, for their reactions to the unusual town meeting after an unusual year.
Like,
I thought it was terrific. Thank goodness it was not snowing or raining, but a bright sunny day, breeze was terrific, and people seemed to enjoy it. Speeding in the village is a perennial issue. I was a little surprised that it took as long as it did to discuss it today. Otherwise, I thought it was a fairly calm meeting. It was good to see an election of select persons. I think these the times when we just have the nomination and no contest, it becomes kind of routine. I think having two people compete for a post is a good idea. So I thought that was helpful.
I'm really pleased that the weather turned out as it did. Given that the weather did turn out as it did, I don't know that I could have been surprised, because my expectations were all over the place. We have people that may have been in Florida that weren't because of COVID or because the meeting is late enough in the year so that they're back. We did have as you witnessed, there was the topic of speeding in the village, which is perennial. But it probably got dwelled on a little bit more than usual this year because traffic has moved through the village more rapidly, particularly earlier in the COVID times. I think the budget, the voting on the budget went, and appropriations went very smoothly, maybe more smoothly than I recall in the past. And I think people enjoyed it. I think they enjoyed getting together. I think they enjoyed being able to sit outside in good weather and see each other, and we can still see people standing around chatting.
Next year, if all goes according to plan, it will be back inside the theater on the first Tuesday in March. The weather is unlikely to be as picture-perfect as it was on Tuesday, May 25th. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.